Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet. How's it going? We, of course, have myself, Rich Straffolino, subbing in here, doing the DTNS. Looking forward to talking about the technology news. We'll, of course, have the Justin Robert Young on as well. And Amos is our trusty producer today.
No,
so, Amos, appreciate that.
That's not a thing, is it?
A trusty producer?
Yeah, a trusty producer. There's something wrong with that.
If it was a radio serial, you'd be my loyal manservant. Which doesn't have any implications at all.
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
No. My valet. Maybe valet sounds better.
Valet, yeah.
Valet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You like drive a cool car, wear a uniform. I, of course, am some sort of superhero playboy.
No, that actually does sound a little more exciting, yeah.
Yeah. So, but like our only superpower is we just run around and tell people the technology news of the day.
Right. Well, of course. I mean, that would be silly otherwise.
Like you just like imagine like someone's like, help, someone stole my purse. I was like, Samsung makes 7-nanometer chips. Check it out. would it help? It wouldn't hurt.
I don't know that it could hurt in that circumstance. Could it?
Like, think about it. Someone steals your phone and you go, listen, Apple's coming out with a new iPhone next month anyway. No loss. Don't right. worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, the announcement's going to be on the 9th. Like,
exactly. Hey, by the way, head on over to Twitch. You can hear this live.
Yeah. Head on over to Twitch. You can hear us speak to you personally about your current situation on a slight delay. Or you could always watch it later if you want to know what you should have done.
Basically, what I'm saying is we're superheroes on the show. And, you know, I'm just glad to be do a small part of it. Have a guest starring role.
Yeah, I'm going to hit Justin real quick just to make sure he's...
And I'm sending out a tweet as well because I'm very professional. Join the stream. Or if you want a taste of what my children are currently enjoying, you can watch the Cast Iron Cooks episode of Sesame Street.
Oh.
Which is a send up to Iron Chef, of course, featuring Jason Schwartzman. This is quite amusing.
That sounds exciting.
Okay. Tweet has been sent.
Okay. Justin is delayed by Skype updates, so
that the old sounds Skyperoo.
Right? Yeah, no, that's completely legit. That we can forgive him for that.
Well, they only do like one update a year or something like that. So you know, it just seems like a weird time to install that, Justin.
there's no choice. You
yeah.
you're uploading. You're updating now, son.
Clearly, I mean, you should just never quit Skype is the clear answer.
The only answer to avoid tyranny.
Yeah, sometimes they'll be nice and they'll give you a warning. Hey, there's a Skype update ready. Would you like to do it now or next time you start Skype? And it's always, well, neither one of those are going to be convenient. So,
yeah.
Rich, you said you were saying that you're going to eat dinner right after this, and I'm going to go eat lunch. So, what are you going to have for dinner tonight?
I think it's a Cobb salad kind of night. Going to have some spinach heavy greens, hard boiled egg, maybe some grilled chicken. I mean, it's going to be cooked chicken. It's not going to be boiled. I'm not going to take the time to bread it. So that sounds delightful. Maybe a nice vinaigrette. I know the blue cheese is usually kind of a go-to with Cobb, but it's not really my bag.
So wait, is that normally like how many salads for dinner a week do you have?
I'm going to say downwards of one.
All right. Sub one, but tonight's the time.
Tonight's the time. Well, it was like because it's like all I ate was like, I was like breakfast was a donut. Lunch was pizzas made from English muffins. And I was like, I'm going to die. So I need, I just need something else in the system.
Man, I'll tell you what, I'm with you, man. I've been eating like garbage on the road. Yeah, we had Orlando and came back to California, then Texas, and then tonight we're off to Ohio. So I've been eating like dog butt.
Well, Ohio, I mean, clearly is the healthy eating capital of the of these great United States.
No, it's going to be really easy in, you know, betwixt Columbus and Cleveland to find myself a healthy meal. I'm sure I'll be really excited.
Just stop off in beautiful Worcester and a nice satellite campus of Ohio State University. I'm sure you'll find many a delightful treat there.
Well, I mean, so we're usually around the Manchester area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there's some stuff there. I got a Whole Foods, you know.
It's weird. We were in Springfield, Ohio, which I thought was going to be really depressing. And it turned out it was not, because they have like, it's like every place. There's like just super cool stuff you just no one knows about unless you live there. And they just have like a whole street of it's like, hey, we have cool indie record shops like in between like all the closed down factories and stuff like that. And like, here's our, you know, our artisanal brewery and our, you know, our vegan cheese sommelier over here. And it was really cool.
Yeah, you know, Ohio. I like Ohio. I don't really make fun of it all that much since I've gone there a lot. But I got to say, it's a good time. The more that I've gone there, the more I've liked it.
It's very flat, though. That would be my takeaway.
Yeah, there's some hill. I remember there's some hill with some sort of like Native American significance that I went to. But that might be the only elevation that I've ever seen in Ohio.
There are some snake burial mounds that are are known for.
Yeah.
Or you learn about in Ohio history class, I should say. We are not known for that, but
yeah.
But like the elevation is so bizarre. Like I stopped over in Salt Lake City, like in the airport, just for like an hour. And I was like so captivated by the fact that there was like scenery to look at. And it wasn't just like expanses of grass and or asphalt that I was like, should I move here? This is amazing. There's things to look at.
It does look, because it looks like a backdrop, right? Or it looks like, like depending on how foggy it is, it's however you've set your graphics processor for rendering. <Yeah. laughs>
My anti-aliasing was way up. It was great.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I learned when I moved to Indiana from California was, you know, I lived in the Antelope Valley. So we had I called them mountains at the time, but we had mountains on all sides. And the San Andreas Fault was right next to, you know, like a half mile from my house. So, you know, we had features. And then I moved to Indiana and they were like, yeah, just go up the hill. And the hill would be like a 10-foot elevation increase. Like that's not a hill. That's a mound. That's just normal rolling fields of grain.
Yeah, you know, Florida is certainly not known for its elevation, but there is a place called Mount Dora in the central Florida area that is like I just want to know Dora's PR agent, because that's
Mount
gross overstatement.
It's an aggressive hill.
Yeah.
Speaking of elevation and salads, I was very impressed trying the Pittsburgh salad from one time, which is just a salad with fries in it. And also, it's very hilly in Pittsburgh, so it joins our two conversations together.
Now, putting fries and stuff, a very Pittsburgh tradition, of course, the Permani Brothers sandwich. Have you ever had a Permani Brothers sandwich?
I have had a panini sandwich, which is the same thing. It's coleslaw and fries and stuff on a sandwich with big, thick bread.
Wait, but you've never...
I've never been.
Proper Permani Brothers sandwich, which, by the way, they are very litigious. I'm sure. No joking. Like, there was once a Pittsburgh sports bar that was selling those sandwiches, and Permani Brothers got wind and threatened legal action until they knocked off doing it. But that is unique. I actually had one not long ago, a Permani Brothers sandwich. They have a Permani Brothers on Fort Lauderdale Beach, oddly enough. Open 24/7.
Boy, at 2 a.m.
Oh,
soak up the night.
That Permani Brothers sandwich, gift from heaven.
Mm. There was a 24-hour donut place that was like a 5-minute walk from my college campus that I believe may have served a similar point, because theoretically, a Permani's Brothers sandwich is good, But this was like, these were like well donuts. Like these were at all times, they were mediocre donuts, but they got better as the night went on.
Oh, one of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there are like crap food that gets better.
Yeah.
like nostalgia, familiarity, or inebriation.
The Taco Bell phenomenon, as we call it.
I mean, I will say I've certainly eaten far more sober Taco Bell than I've eaten drunk Taco Bell, though.
It always sounds like a better idea, and then I just lose steam. Like I'm at the age now where I'm just like I'm two beers in. I'm like, I'm just gonna go to bed. What am I doing? Okay.
I love cheeseburgers and I love donuts. Those are like donuts are like my thing. And at the fair here in Alaska, they have one place that sells donut cheeseburgers, where instead of a bun, it's halves of a very large glazed donut. And you want to talk about things that lose their thrill about halfway through? That donut cheeseburger was amazing for about three bites, and then it was just like, why am I doing this to myself?
No, yeah, you just find yourself like it's just a very sobering mirror put up to all your choices. are brushing glaze crumbs out of your beard, and also having to dab the burger juice out of it.
And soak up the self-respect. Always the best.
I should have known it was a bad thing when they offered me ketchup with it. And I was like, why? So I should have known from the beginning, but I didn't.
I will say that if you are a fan of those kinds of monstrosities, you owe it to yourself to go to the Texas Fair. It has its own permanent location, but boy, are the foods there just things that should not be, they were not invented by God.
Speaking of blessed things, it's about time to start the show.
Let's go. I'm super excited. Let's do this.
All right, Rich, go ahead and count yourself in and we will get started.
All right, let's do this in 5, 4, 3. Coming up on DTNS, lasers are making some noise. How can NBC differentiate their streaming service and Apple in space? This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, December 20th, 2019, in lovely Cleveland. I'm Rich Strappolino.
And from Alaska's backyard, I'm Amos.
And remember, you can always get the wider conversation on our expanded show before we get started here. It's called Good Day Internet, and you can find it by becoming a member at patreon.com/DTNS. Hey, let's get started with a few tech things you should know.
The Philadelphia-based convenience store chain Wawa discovered malware on its payment processing server December 10th, which appears to have been in place since March 2019 and possibly have affected all 700 locations across Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, and Virginia. Exposed data includes credit card numbers, names, and expiration dates, but not PINs or CVV2 numbers. The company says it will offer a free credit monitoring and identity theft protection to all affected customers. And I got a sub from your Orlando location, so I'm on the lookout.
Apple published an open source version of the HomeKit accessory development kit on GitHub under the Apache 2.0 license. Anyone can now use the code to develop HomeKit integrations, but releasing a HomeKit compatible accessory still requires Apple certification.
Facebook announced it will no longer use phone numbers provided for two-factor authentication to friend feed recommendations after it stopped using the numbers for advertising purposes in June. The change is rolling out to Ecuador, Ethiopia, Pakistan, Libya, Cambodia, and globally in 2020.
And Motorola announced it will delay the pre-order and launch of its Razr foldable phone, kind of dousing some of the excitement there. No new dates have been announced for either. It was originally supposed to launch January 6th, but Motorola says it doesn't anticipate a significant shift from its original timetable. We will see. All right, let's talk a little bit more about one of the big news stories coming out today. This was kind of developing throughout the day. I thought it was interesting. The first test flight of Boeing's CST-100 Starliner passenger spacecraft failed to reach the right orbit when it launched into space. No passengers were aboard the flight. It was a test. And Boeing says the vehicle is safe and stable. However, according to NASA, the Starliner will not reach its original planned destination at the International Space Station. It appears that the Atlas V rocket that launched the Starliner put it on its planned suborbital path, and from there, the Starliner was supposed to ignite its rockets and kind of get into its main orbital path to dock with the International Space Station. However, while something did ignite on the Starliner's engine, it didn't do the burn properly, and they suspect it's a software issue that kind of caused things to go awry. The Starliner is part of NASA's Commercial Crew Program, and a successful test was believed to pave the way for astronauts to use the vehicle sometime in late 2020. I believe December 2020 was when it was planned for. So, I mean, unless this was a minor glitch, which in space, I guess there are no minor glitches, seems like that's going to slip from now. SpaceX and Boeing were kind of the two are the only two companies in the Commercial Crew Program. Both of them have had some issues with some of their early tests on this. Kind of a big deal for, you know, NASA's plan to use commercial flight to get into to send stuff up and from the ISS. Right, Justin?
Well, yeah. And certainly because this is a far more competitive space than it used to be. I mean, granted, SpaceX and Boeing are the only people there, but SpaceX didn't exist 10 years ago. Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, companies like that, which are all part of the United Launch Alliance, they were really the only game in town. So the fact that SpaceX has been able to iterate and have tremendous amounts of success with these kinds of programs leading up to this point, well, you know, that is, certainly footsteps that that Boeing should be hearing behind them. And this is not a good sign for them.
Yeah. And it's, you know, on the one hand, I guess we'll have to wait to see till like the full report comes in on this. Because again, if it was, I mean, I don't want to say it would be a good thing if it was some sort of software glitch due to quality control or something like that. But, you know, at least, you know, we heard reports of, you know, SpaceX was having on some of their later stage rocket launches earlier this year, or just I think last month, you know, where they were having unexpected pressure buildups and that kind of stuff. So if you have to have a failure, I guess software is the easiest and the less architectural to fix, but still could be a problem for them going down the road.
Not to mention the fact that Boeing's got to be wondering, like, when is it not 2019 anymore?
Yeah,
they've had a rough year. They want to change that calendar as soon as possible. Uber has announced that it signed a multi-year commercial contract with electric aviation startup Joby Aviation to launch a fast, reliable, clean, and affordable urban air taxi service in select markets. This marks the first announced partnership committing Uber's plan to launch flying taxi services by 2023. Under the terms of the deal, Joby will supply and operate electric air taxis, while Uber will provide air traffic control help, landing pad construction, and connections to ground transportation. Joby was founded in 2009, revealed in 2018 that it had raised $100 million in venture funding, and demoed a plane-drone hybrid aircraft to Bloomberg Reports last year. The Bloomberg Reports also add that they were described as twice as fast as a helicopter and as loud as a swarm of super bees, which I guess is not as loud as a plane, but certainly maybe more terrifying. Uber has previously named six other aerospace companies working on electric vertical takeoff and landing prototypes for the service.
Yeah, this VTOL or eVTOL, if you're talking about electric vehicles specifically, you know, vertical takeoff market seems to be I don't want to say blowing up or anything like that, but certainly growing up where, you know, someone committing to within essentially 3 years being able to offer this. But, you know, Justin, Uber has obviously been expanding its applicable market beyond. They want to tell you they're not a ride sharing company anymore. They want to tell you they're a technology platform, and they've certainly expanded into things like Uber Eats, Uber Works, other tangential things, or not tangential, other markets like that. They've had their Uber Copter service, which seemed a little silly and is very specialized in New York City right now. Do you think if this launches in 2023, it will be akin to something like that, where it'll be this hyper specialized, hey, we're going to have these eVTOL from, you know, taking to LAX or just very specific locations? Or do you see this anytime soon having a broader launch like that?
No, I think that this is going to be in very, very specific markets. I don't care how you think a swarm of super bees here. We will wait and see on whether or not it annoys people down on the ground, because I think that that is a huge barrier that these people are going to have to cross. And I don't mean just Joby. I mean anybody who wants to be in this market. There's a lot of real world rubber meets the road that needs to happen between now and then. That being said, I do think that it is important for Uber to continue to branch out into other places. They maintain very, very clearly that they are a matching service. They are not there just for ride shares. And so anybody who thinks that that is the only application, then specifically the state of California, then they are wrong, right? But this is going to literally just exist so people can take off from south of Market and say, go and get down to Palo Alto or vice versa. That I cannot see this being something that has a larger application, or at least would be cheaper or more reliable and less dangerous than driving.
I am a little surprised, though, that they're hitching their wagon, I guess, or they're announcing this very close partnership with this company, Joby Aviation, which not a lot of people know a ton about. All the reporting that I was seeing on it was basically like they effectively were just a name in Crunchbase at a certain point. In 2018 was the first time that anyone kind of found out who was even backing them. And it seems like there was only like two Bloomberg reporters that got to fly in one demo aircraft. And Joby is saying that that aircraft is not really representative of what they're working on now. So it does seem a little odd to be announcing this partnership with basically a company you know nothing about. Although, I guess when you're not tying yourself to specifics, it's hard not to to disappoint people if no one really knows what you're actually promising.
Look, they're going to run the exact route that I said, and people would be thrilled to pay $300 a pop to do it.
I just say, why not call it a super swarm of bees? I would think that sounds not quite as intimidating. That would be my thought. CNBC reported new details about how NBC plans to differentiate its Peacock streaming service. The information previously reported that NBC was considering three tiers that aren't at all confusing: a free ad-supported tier with a limited content library so one can get access to all Peacock content, a $5 a month tier with limited ads, and a $10 a month ad-free option. The paid tiers would have full access to content. Sources now tell CNBC that Peacock will reportedly provide streaming content directly to users when opening up the app, similar to turning on a TV, so you'd have something kind of already playing when you activated the service. This could be live content from NBC's free streaming news service, everyone's favorite NBC News Now, or an on-demand show, depending. I'm imagining they would let you set some sort of preferences for that. Peacock will include 15,000 hours of content at launch, including things like The Office, Cheers, and Friday Night Lights. With new original content planned, there's a Saved by the Bell reunion show that's supposed to be planned, but reportedly it will not include NBC broadcast content or 2020 Olympic coverage. They don't, they're very eager not to cannibalize their existing broadcast business. Peacock is still in beta testing and not expected to launch until April. So it sounded like, especially that broadcast kind of when you open the app feature, you know, might still be in testing. But Justin, do people want like the Netflix auto roll when they first open the app? Does that sound like the best way to differentiate yourself as a streaming service?
No. No, it doesn't. It sounds annoying. It sounds like something that if you were to open it up, you'd forget your phone wasn't muted, and it would make a loud noise, and you would find yourself embarrassed and apologizing to those in the meeting that you just disrupted because you were trying to sneaky watch Cheers. Look, this is a decision by NBC to say for the stuff that they own or the stuff that they have close relationships with that they want to get in this game instead of licensing out things that they have the rights to. That being said, I don't think that that's really a winner here. If it's not integrating directly with live TV, if it's not giving you everything that NBC can give you, then that is not going to be great, in my opinion. And also, it's confusing. Like, I don't know which one I want. Like, I mean, theoretically, the only reason why I would want Peacock is if I was just one of those folks and like, I think we all have friends, or we might be those people ourselves, that just want to watch The Office as they go to sleep every night, right? Like that there's just like a relationship with certain syndicated programs, be they The Simpsons or The Office or Friends or something like that, that is very comforting to people and are very valuable in a binge watching society, because you see a lot of kids that like run out of content. And so guess what's there for them? These gigantic behemoth shows that were making 30 episodes a year in the 90s. And so that's why Friends and The Office have kind of had their own extended longevity. I can't imagine that this will take off. In fact, I would make a prediction that it will be dead by the end of 2020.
Yeah. I mean, that's the weird thing is to kind of very publicly say, like, we don't want to cannibalize our existing services. Like, they have to realize they're competing with services that, like, literally are trying to do the exact opposite, right? Where they're just trying to give you as much as, like, Netflix is just trying to give you as much as possible. They're releasing more shows than TV released in 2005. We just talked about earlier this week. You know, you have Disney Plus. That's, you know, can you imagine if Disney Plus had launched and they said, you know, yeah, we're going to have all of our original content. We're going to have The Mandalorian, but we're not going to put our movies on, you know, like our, you know, our first run movies on there or anything like that. I mean,
in defense of NBC, this is a different and more difficult decision to put on live content. If they are launching this with shows that are currently airing on their network that they did not make deals previously to allow for it, then that's something that, that they do have to either cut another check to the people that are making these shows or wait until those shows kind of die out. You can get new shows that do have that allowance on it. And live television is not simple. So that and they also have other partners that they sell their stations to as part of other live television.
Yeah. There's a larger contractual obligation. But Justin, my question to you is not that you would want to turn on the app and it would have the, automatically playing a show, but would you want like a thing you could select that would just automatically play, like say you like The Office, you like Cheers, you like some other NBC shows, that you could just set like a certain favorite shows and it would just randomly pick one and start playing it kind of to simulate that kind of lean back experience? It's like, to me, that's as close as I want to get to that kind of, I'm just dipping in and out kind of situation. I don't want to have to choose something.
I mean, I would be more into a TikTok style little teasers of a bunch of stuff that I might like that I can like, man, flip. No, that's the one. I want to go with that. I would be more into that. But no, I think in general, people have been trying to make lean back happen for so long that I don't think that we're ever going to make fetch happen. The French Competition Authority fined Google €120 million after its investigation found that the company abused its dominant position in the online search advertising market. In its decision, the regulator found that Google's ad business had, quote, opaque and difficult to understand, unquote, operating rules that were applied in a, quote, unfair and random manner, unquote. With interpretations of rules changing over time and based on advertisers, Google must now define its operating rules for ads in an objective, transparent, and non-discriminatory manner, set up a system of alerts to help advertisers avoid suspensions, and provide annual training for Google ad support staff. The decision comes after a 2015 complaint was filed with the regulator by Gib Media after Google closed its ad account without notice. Google said it will appeal the decision, which I feel like that should be something that everybody around the world, whenever anybody reads a story about European regulators slapping a gigantic fine on an American company, we should all repeat in unison, Google said it will appeal the decision.
Well, yeah, and that just goes to show how long these kind of cases go on. You know, this is a 2015 complaint. Odds are this will probably continue well into 2020 with any kind of appeal and stuff like that. You know, who knows? That's one of the problems I have with sometimes with these regulatory disputes is that any kind of change that's a result of it is so far from the actual infraction that it seems like, you know, it's hard for. I mean, I would. The regulator is doing their job. Obviously, they're going at the speed of, you know, government for better or worse. But sometimes that, I'm sure, can be frustrating for a lot of these parties that are involved, 4 years later than having to get appealed on a lot of these rules. A new paper published in Light Science and Applications, it's also the name of my favorite Tangerine Dream album, researchers at MIT described a system of using lasers to mimic the capabilities of an ultrasound machine, but can be used at distances of up to half a meter as opposed to requiring physical contact. The researchers used a laser wavelength of 1,550 nanometers, which is absorbed by water but won't harm skin and the eyes. By pulsing the laser to heat and cool the skin, the contracting skin creates steady oscillations and, by effect, sound waves, which go through the body like an ultrasound. The researchers use a second laser to measure the vibrations of the skin these sound waves cause, which can be processed to actually produce an image of what's inside. Resolutions aren't quite up to ultrasound standards yet. They kind of had two side-by-sides there, and the laser image is a little rougher than the ultrasound. We link to the Gizmodo piece here. But the technique can already distinguish between bone, fat deposits, and muscles. You know, Justin, this is kind of exciting for me. I have some relatives that, you know, have some issues of either laying prone for too long. I know this can be also issues be pretty relevant for if you're a burn victim or something like that, and they need to, you know, see if there's anything inside of you that doesn't require physical contact. It's all around much more comfortable and a really interesting advance to basically use heat to create sound waves. That's kind of interesting.
No, it's absolutely fascinating, and I can't wait to see kind of where it goes, because these kinds of breakthroughs very obvious or very, very often wind up becoming very interesting, kind of groundbreaking commercial uses for it. You know, there's a lot of things that, like you just mentioned, that we don't realize, like, oh, you don't realize you need a better bicycle until somebody starts doing donuts around you in one.
Of course, this article wouldn't be complete without future dystopia news of being able to use this without your knowledge to, you know, theoretically. Although I don't know if it could be used. Obviously, it would require watery tissue. So I don't know how, like, weirdly dystopic that gets. I guess they can see if you're pregnant with lasers and you don't know it.
I was going to say, yeah, they'd be able to see the burrito that I howled in that show.
Yeah, my English muffin pizza will be on display for all of the dystopian governments to see. All right. Remember, you can get all of the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes. Subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com. You'll hear me there quite a bit. All right, Justin. Big news was kind of all over. Bloomberg's resident Apple whisperer, Mark Gurman, reported that, according to sources, let's just keep that in mind, Apple has a team of about a dozen engineers working on satellites and wireless tech, with the goal of deploying its results within 5 years. That sounds a little ambiguous, and that's because it sounds like they're still kind of nailing down exactly what this project is going to be. But the project is in its early phases, and the clear use hasn't been quite finalized. Apple is reportedly looking into using them possibly to provide data connectivity to devices without a traditional carrier, essentially, you know, beaming internet from the space, or for more precise location tracking, which seems pedestrian, but maybe easier to do, also maybe creepy. It's unclear if Apple intends to develop and launch its own satellite constellation or develop earthbound equipment to send into an existing satellite network, kind of provide that back end, maybe to build a service on top of. The team is led by Michael Trella and John Fenwick, who led the satellite imaging company Skybox Imaging, which you may have heard about because Google acquired them in 2014, and they continue to work at Google into 2017. Looking further into the Bloomberg article, it seems like Apple has staffed up with some people with some more wireless chops. There's Matt Eidus, who's kind of regarded in the industry as you know, one of a big technological visionary in the wireless space. They have former aerospace executive Ashley Moore Williams and the head of Netflix's CDN efforts, Daniel Ellis. I think that is very telling in terms of you know, much more practical implementations of this. So Apple in space, Justin. Why is space becoming the new Hollis? You know, we've seen SpaceX, we've seen OneWeb, we've seen Amazon kind of all wanting to get into the satellite game. Is that the next big cash cow for a lot of these big tech companies?
Oh, there's no doubt. I think I saw something years and years ago that the first trillionaire will come out of people who are making money in space, because there is just so much possible out there, and you're going to be able to build it on top of the existing stuff that you have. That being said, the reason why we are getting more of this is because it is cheaper to get out there. But SpaceX, everything we're talking about up top, about how fast SpaceX has gone, how much pressure it has put on some of the other rocket companies, how many more rocket companies are kind of being created each and every day, means that it's cheaper to put satellites into space. Therefore, you can be a little bit more experimental about it. But what I find fascinating about this is not necessarily that they are doing it, because Apple certainly has a very long track record of buying whoever they want to work on whatever they want, whether or not they are exactly going to do it. But it does remind me of about 5 years ago, we first heard about Project Titan, aka the Apple car. This is something that apparently there are still people at Apple working on, although whether or not it's a full car prototype remains to be seen. That there have been reports that maybe those goals have shifted a little bit. But to look at that then, the idea that there would be, that they would want to take to the ultimate in product sales, that the, you know, oftentimes one of the most expensive things that people own in their lifetime, other than a house, is a car. And Apple wants to bring their brand into that. And now that we see the prices per unit on Apple products continue to rise, and the services become more and more of a way that they can make money. The idea of a satellite network that can give you internet, or that can give iPhone or iPad or Apple TV users a leg up in terms of the kind of quality of their day-to-day experience is fascinating. I think that the two sides of that coin, the Apple Car, the ultimate product, Apple satellite internet, the ultimate service, kind of shows you how different the focus of that company is 5 years ago to now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's important to point out, I mean, this is still, from all the reporting, seems to still be a skunkworks project for Apple at this point. Like I said, it's a team of about a dozen people compared to a company like SpaceX is, you know, making plans to put 12,000 satellites into orbit, Amazon putting 3,200. They're already starting to do test launches and that kind of stuff, getting clearances with, you know, government agencies and stuff like that to put that up. But to your point, a little bit, I think this plays into kind of Apple's traditional space in that they're usually not the first movers in any of these. So let's let SpaceX figure out how much of a pain it is to do a lot of this stuff. And then if Apple does decide to launch their own constellation, which I don't even know if that's, you know, necessarily their plan, they can, you know, they can kind of learn from those initial efforts. They can see where the problem areas with those are. Like I said, they're not going to be coming out with deploying their first results within 5 years, and you know, giving their competition theoretically a leg up, but also a lot of room to make a lot of mistakes with that as well. I think it's also interesting that basically since the launch of the iPhone, there was always that persistent rumor that Apple really wanted to become their own carrier for the longest time, and I think that was even mentioned maybe in the Steve Jobs biography or something like that, where they really didn't want to be tied into, you know, kind of the old telecom world and stuff like that, and wanted to be able to just offer that service directly. You know, maybe the longer term play, I don't know if space was always in the cards, but this would certainly play into that as well.
Well, the other thing to remember with them is that they will very often set stuff up just so they can then understand why they need to buy somebody else.
Yeah.
And that is part of their plan. But, you know, to me, this just has it all written all over it is Apple wants more services.
Yeah. And, you know, what's the one thing you can't quit? It's that internet. So we will see, again, it's, you know, I hate to end a news story and a discussion with, we will see, but this is the ultimate, we will see, but certainly interesting news. And, we'll see if we hear any more, if Mark Gurman's sources, whisper to him in the dead of night and we see more reporting from that going forward. Thanks to all those who participate though in our subreddit. We get stories from there all the time. I know I do for Daily Tech Headlines. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and join in the conversation on our Discord, which you can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS. Justin, let's check out what's in the mailbag. What do we got today?
Well, Jerry writes, I wanted to write in about your discussion of the Google Assistant reducing our illuminating robocalls. I believe it was Sarah that said that she wished her iPhone had something like that. Well, it does in a way. It will not answer the calls by talking to the robot, but it will intercept the calls and screen them for you. You see, in the newest version of iOS and the iPhone, there's a setting to send all calls not on your contacts list, not a recent outgoing call, or not in Siri suggestions straight to voicemail. It is so amazing. If it's a legitimate call, they leave a voicemail. Otherwise, nothing. If they do leave a voicemail, then Siri provides a transcript. Pure heaven. It has changed my experience with calls in so many ways. If you have flicked the switch or have not flicked the switch, I highly recommend it.
I, of course, have my patented method of not asking anyone to call me and never answering my phone unless basically it's my wife or an in-law or a parent. But if you're a social butterfly, definitely something good to keep in mind on the iOS side for sure.
Indeed.
All right. And of course, we have it's Friday. It wouldn't be a Friday without some Len Peralta artwork. Now, he couldn't be on the show, but we let Len know what we were going to be talking about. And he created some amazing work. Amos, can we get that up on the screen if it's not already? But you can check that out and you can go head on over if you're interested in checking that out. Go to LenPeraltaStore.com. We actually have the link to that particular piece in the show notes. So check that out as well. Of course, we want to thank Justin Robert Young for being on the show today. Justin, you do a couple podcasts, maybe one that I was listening to while I was driving my 2-year-old to get a haircut. what's going on in the political podcast world?
Gotcha. All right. So probably the big one is, of course, Raise the Dead. Raise the Dead is my brand new historical politics series that tracks the 1960 election between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. And the newest episode has now dropped. It is all about Richard Nixon. We've spent 2 episodes barely mentioning the man, so we dedicated an entire episode to him. His rise from being a poor kid in Southern California to the top of the political mountain, and the moment in 1960 when he almost ruined his entire career and infuriated some of the most influential members of the Republican Party. Go ahead and check it out. Raise the Dead.
Just fantastic. Highly, highly recommend. And thanks to all of our amazing patrons. And we just want to let you know, we have new Patreon reward merchandise to celebrate 6 years of DTNS. Len Peralta created a 6-year anniversary DTNS logo. If you back at certain levels at patreon.com/DTNS for 3 months, you can get either a sticker, a poster, a mug, or a t-shirt. Get the details at patreon.com/DTNS/merch. And you can always support our show at any level at dailytechnewsshow.com/Patreon. Remember, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 21:30 UTC. This will be, however, the last live DTNS show for 2019. Regular cast and Tom, Sarah, and the gang will return Thursday, January 2nd, 2020. And make sure you check out all of our pre-recorded episodes that are going to be coming out. We're going to be starting with the DTNS Live With It, and that'll kick off all of our end-of-the-year holiday specials. And don't forget to check out Tom, Scott on their New Year's Eve live Current Geek at 6:30 Eastern, 23:30 UTC at twitch.tv/DC Streamathon. Thanks so much, and remember, everybody, have a super sparkly day.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
I believe that's a show.
That's a show. Good job, everybody. Good job.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should have timed that end music a little bit better.
I was doing it in my head. I was like, I can't talk any faster. There's things to say. I should have moved it down a little further in the rundown, Amos. That wasn't fair to you.
Yeah, that was. I mean, we had everything else work right. So
everyone will forgive you.
I'm sure okay. They will eventually.
Shucks.
Hey, this has been a great show. What should we call it?
Oh, do we have to go to the showbots?
Yeah, dtns.showbot.tv.
All right, let's see what we got here.
The perennial show without merit, of course.
Oh, I swear to God, Zoe. One of these days.
I mean, I'm all for Uber Bees, but that's... I'm a child also.
I like Uber Bees is a good one. There are no minor glitches in space is also be good.
For whom the Uber VTOLs, like, I know what you're doing. I also don't know what I'm supposed to do with that, but I appreciate it. I see you --.
Apple takes a bite out of space.
Pregnant with lasers is funny.
That might be a GDI title. No minor glitches in space. I like that. I think that works.
All right, cool.
All right, thank you.
We had 2 space stories. So
yeah, thank you, Captain Jack 913.
Absolutely.
And now let's get us a title for GDI. GDI.showbot.tv. And a few good ones there.
Oh, yes.
We've got Exploring Mount Dora.
Oh, I do like that.
Mediocre Donuts.
2 beers and I'm done. Thank you, Zoe.
She knows you so well.
I like Exploring Mount Dora.
Yeah, I think that's a win there.
Moja Am.
Moja Am.
Well, No, I had it right the first time. Don't worry. I declare it so. So, any wonderful weekend? Justin, you told us you're heading down to CBUS, right?
I am. Yeah, just yet another gigantic flight across the country. But we are doing a red eye into Columbus, spending a day in Columbus, and then we drive on up to Manchester, Ohio, to visit Ashley's family for the holidays.
It is the holiday season, from what I'm told.
Yes. But you were saying that the snow isn't terrible.
No. The roads will be completely clear. It'll just it'll look kind of cute, and you can tell who didn't mow their lawn before the snow. Which is always helpful.
Yeah.
Spoiler, I didn't mow my lawn before the snow.
There we go.
So this is a personal thing for you.
Yeah, it's just my personal shame. I'm just waiting for like a foot of snow, just kind of cover it all up till the spring.
Yeah, our snow here came really late in the season, so I kept mowing my grass and putting my lawnmower away, and then mowing my grass and putting the lawnmower away, and eventually just said screw it and gave up. And then we had like a week of sunshine, so now the grass started growing. I was like, I'm not pulling the lawnmower back out, and now we have that. You can see the snow see the grass through the snow.
So, Amos, let me ask you a question. One of my favorite sights in like a nice April Cleveland afternoon is the pile of sludge snow that hasn't melted in all the shopping mall parking lots. And that's usually like a March, April clear up for the last of them. How long in Alaska? I'm told it's cold there. Is that like into May or something like that? Or what's the usual time range there?
It is. It does stay until May. But we have what they call the breakup here, which is things slowly freeze in the wintertime, like it's completely frozen right now. But in the spring, it takes almost a month to fully thaw everything out. And while it does, everything, the entire state is just mud everywhere. And that's part of that. Because, right now, if you go to the parking lots, there's small piles of semi-clean snow. But by the end of the winter, everything's been plowed, and they don't use salt here. They use gravel. So it's been plowed and graveled so many times, it's just a big mound of yuck. And then as that starts melting down in May, you just end up with a big pile of gravel sitting in the corner of every parking lot in town.
It's good. There is that is like my most Midwestern thing, though, is that the sound of like salt on like a nice boot on concrete is like my ASMR like favorite thing ever. It's like a nice crisp morning. You're like the first one up. The sun's not up and you're walking out and you just hear that. Nothing better. Except for like being warm and like in the sun. But
I would file that one as an addendum.
Now Justin, you are famously anti-snow.
Well, I'm not famously anti-snow.
How long have you been famously anti-snow, Justin?
I'm not famously anti-snow in concept. I have some pointed things to say about choosing to live in snow, because I do think that it is an unnecessary element of our society that many people can avoid. There's plenty of land, folks. You can live without it. It's totally fine. It's better for your health. But in general, look, I was raised in the Sun Belt. I lived in, born in Texas and lived in Florida and California, and I've spent most of my life in those regions, and with a few sojourns into some of the most snowy areas in the world. So I feel like I know what I'm saying, but obviously people get a little upset when I tell them that if you live in snow, you're a masochist, and if you raise children in snow, you're a child abuser.
Oh, I'm so looking forward. My son just tried on his snow boots for the first time, and he was like, "Why do I walk funny?" And I was like, "Welcome to the rest of your childhood,
your whole life." Yeah,
yeah.
I think I've told this story a few times, but my first, and I'd seen snow before because I have family up in Long Island, and we go up there during the winter and play in snow and everything. But the first time that I, as an adult, and this is my freshman year in college, up in Syracuse, New York, see snow. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's picturesque. It's one of those like the sun had just gone down, and so like the flakes are kind of accenting all the street lights in this sort of a beautiful, picturesque sort of way. And I'm staring out of the window of Lawrenson Dormitory there on the edge of campus, and I got a little bit of a vantage point, so I see a lot of it coming down. It's beautiful, right? So we go out and I forget if we're going to the dining hall or a party or something like that. But I get out, I take three steps, and on that third step, friends, I slip and fall into the snow, at which point I realize that falling into the snow just means that you have jumped into a pool instantaneously, and now it will only get colder and more awful the longer that you are out. And, that was the end of my love affair with snow. It was brief. It was a very brief, exciting love affair that ended very abruptly.
There was a moment when I was walking to grade school that I kind of had that moment where it was like right on the border where it was like, it probably maybe should have called off school. I'm not going to say, you know, Our Lady of Angel School in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm not saying you let me down, but whatever.
Yeah.
And I was walking down, it's particularly icy, and I must have slipped like three times, like, and like fell on my back, like just like three times, like in a row. And I was walking with my brother, and the third time I just started crying and said, leave me.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I was like, I'm just gonna, this is my life now. I'm just gonna give up, and it's worth it. But my brother would not let me because he knew my mother would be very mad.
I grew up in Southern California, and we got snow every couple years in Palmdale. And when you did, it was like a huge event. Like the entire neighborhood, you never talked to your neighbors at all, but suddenly there's snow on the ground and everybody comes out and we're all building snowmen and doing all the things. And then I moved to Indiana, and my first winter there, our spring break was overrided by a sudden winter storm. This is the big nor'easter of 91 that everybody talks about. And, well, I guess not everybody, but some people.
Oh, that nor'easter.
Yeah, yeah. We were at the point where the first two storms collided, so we got enough snow that they sent us home early on Wednesday when our spring break was supposed to start on, you know, that weekend. And we had 9 days without electricity. And that was my first full experience with the snow and the winter storms. And the thing that I remember the most about it, you know, other than using the backyard as a refrigerator because we didn't have power for our actual refrigerator, but it was plenty cold outside, that kind of thing. We, in our town in Indiana, we had a mountain, which was, you know, basically a hill. at the town square, in the town square, it was still paved in brick. So once it froze, that was snow skiing or shoe skiing land, you know? You'd go to the top and you get a little bit of run and you'd see how far down the block you could go. And we were getting pretty good at it. We'd been out there most of the day. And we were really, like all of us, this whole group of probably 10 of my friends and stuff, we were doing really good. We were getting well past halfway to the next street. And about that time, we're like, okay, well, let's go get something to eat. We can come back and do this later. There's streetlights in the town square. We can come back and do this all night, you know? And as we're getting ready to leave, we step on the sidewalk, and none of us had thought in our heads, hey, the sidewalk's probably pretty slick too. One person falls, they grab someone on their way down, they take another one, and then the first group of like four people fell, and the rest of us are laughing. And of course, one person thought it was so funny that they slipped themselves and they grabbed somebody. So by the end of the little laugh area, all of us were on the ground right at the sidewalk. And none of us had maintained our balance after being, you know, thinking we were so good at this shoe skating. And man, it just like capped it off. We didn't go back that night because we were all really sore after, you know, some of us fell on our head and everything else. It was awesome. But yeah, that was,
fell on our head. It was so sick.
It really was. That's like what my one big memory from that snowstorm. And it was a lot of fun. I still talk to most of those people today because we have that in common, I think, maybe. I don't know.
This is not an advocacy for snow, but in defense of cold weather, storing beer in the fridge or in the garage is one of the few benefits of living in the Midwest. When it's a tent garage.
I have enjoyed that. I do remember fondly just being able to like get some beer and then just like put them outside your windowsill. Yeah. Like kind of like the reverse version of like a cooling pie. Like all of a sudden, warm beer can become very cold. Like you really had to chug down one lukewarm one, but by the time you get down to the end of that, the rest of them are pretty good.
Yeah,
you got to think, man, especially if it's freezing. But if it's not, then it's pretty cold. Although my buddy Brett, he once got stranded in I think it was Ohio. It might have been Cleveland even. Well, for our old company, the Go Game, and he was there for. He was supposed to be there for like 2 days, wound up being there for close to a week, actually, because of the snow and the flights that he needed to take. So he claims he invented it, although I'm sure it's in wide practice in some parts of our country. Trunk pizza. So here's the idea.
Okay.
Freezing weather out. You just get the largest pizza you want, right? And he was just by himself. He's just staying in a hotel room by himself. But toss that some bitch in his trunk, right? Next thing you know, anytime he wants pizza, pop that trunk, frozen pizza, boom, right there for you on demand. Like, we all know that that's a delicious thing if you find it in your fridge. Imagine in your car.
You go to leave the house and you're like, hey, I'm kind of hungry. I'll grab a snack.
Yeah, exactly. Pop the trunk, boom, pizza sliced out. You're in the car. You're ready to go.
Still good.
Yeah. So there we go. Trunk pizza was, and that is a Brett Rounds of at Amtrakker. Let at Amtrakker know on Twitter that you think that's brilliant.
Hashtag trunk pizza.
I have a corner of my house that's about 15 feet from where I'm sitting now that's right up against the ground, where the ground kind of comes up to meet the garage on the other side of the house. And from November to May, we don't put like sodas and beers and stuff in the fridge. We just put them next to that wall and they stay the perfect temperature for consumption for half the year just by sitting on the ground right there.
That's amazing. That's what do they call that when you bring up the heat from the ground? Is it to heat your home? I forget what it's called. Geothermal? Geothermal.
Yeah.
Using geothermal cooling there.
Yeah. Amos. There we go.
Nice.
There we go.
It was worth it because I struggled with it.
Well, one thing that is not a struggle is ending our show. Actually, it is a bit of a struggle sometimes. Most of the time. Probably all the time. I'm just gonna say goodbye to the internet now.
Hey, bye, internet.
Goodbye, internet. Have the Cobb salad of your life tonight.
Yeah.